Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Fringe Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutting. Let's get into the news of today, and the first is we're going to be discussing an answer in Parliament to a question asked by the DA MP, Kevin Milam, about municipal debt relating to Eskom. So, according to the Minister of Energy, the total municipal debt owed by various municipalities to Eskom as of the 31st of January 2025 was 94.1 billion rand. They, in their answer, gave a breakdown of which municipality owed which sums of money to making up that 94 billion rand. The most indebted to Eskom municipality in the country is eMalahleni municipality in Mpumalanga, which is around the town formerly known as Witbank, with about 10 billion rand in debt to Eskom. Maluti Apofong, local municipality in the Free State, which is the area around Harry Smith, which has interestingly been governed by a non-ANC coalition of sort of former ANC members in the EFF and other small parties, is in second place with 8.7 billion rand in debt. Back only 3 years ago in 2022, that debt was at 6 billion rand, so it doesn't seem to be improving much. Mfuleni local municipality, which I believe is the south of Gauteng, sort of Vanderbijl Park, Vereeniging, those areas, is at 8 billion. The city of Tshwane is at 6.1 billion rand, although the government indicates here that the payment arrangement they have with the city has been honored. The city of Joburg is at 4.5 billion rand in terms of money owed to Eskom. So clearly, this is a very, very big sums of money here, and it's a major problem because, you know, as we can see in the case of Maluti Apofong, Eskom is really struggling to get this money, these payments back from the various municipalities. And I guess we have to start asking the question, which has been asked by the president: what is the long-term plan to improve the situation here? Eskom has this huge chunk of debt which may not entirely be recoverable on its books, which threatens its financial stability. And the president has talked in his State of the Nation speech about reforming how municipal finances are done. In many of these municipalities, you have the services break down, there's corruption which steals the money, so businesses move out, ratepayers move out, people stop paying because they're not receiving services or they don't want to, and it just creates this deteriorating cycle where, you know, the municipality has no income, but it can't fix anything either. Chris, what are your thoughts on this problem?
So, I mean, this sort of thing has been many, many years in the making. So a combination of factors, municipalities, number one, not delivering services that they should be doing, and the funding that they do then get that should be that they should recoup over time, they then don't pay back to entities like Eskom. And then maybe the second major factor is a lack of adherence to paying to citizens and ratepayers actually paying their rates. We've seen this isolated in some areas in Johannesburg, for example, but I think it's becoming more and more of a trend. And also one can't really blame citizens when they don't get the service which they are promised.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if the municipality itself is not even paying the bills, why would people pay their rates?
Yeah. So we've also now, I mean, added to this whole phenomenon, I know it's not specifically on this, but just this thing of double, triple, quadruple taxation where people pay their rates anyway. Municipalities don't deliver services, so then they have to pay for things like private electricity, private water, private security, etc., etc. I mean, for Eskom, obviously the long-term impact is just because they haven't had the rest of their operations in order. If they also now sit with a debt burden, and a big part of that is from municipalities, they then don't have the capital they need to invest in things like infrastructure, which they should have been doing all this time. So then you've got breakdowns of basic things. You see that from Eskom side, you see it from City Power in Johannesburg, especially where if a substation blows up, they just don't have the available equipment. They need to procure it from somewhere else and make an emergency hack. And then the equipment breaks down again because it's not fixed properly with the right parts or indeed replaced wholesale. So it has various impacts across society, across the economy. When an entity like Eskom, which still is this concentration risk for the economy, where it still has an effective monopoly on electricity generation and distribution. When it fails, broadly economic growth fails in the country. So this is a gargantuan task to try and deal with. It might be one of those examples where you need to eat the elephant one small bite at a time. You need to change behavior. You need to change buy-in from communities, from citizens. I think somewhere like Umgeni in KwaZulu-Natal, the mayor and the municipality have shown there where they try and go into communities and explain to them what they will use their rates for. So if they then buy a new lawnmower, for example, they show this is where the money's going. It's not going to our salaries. Yes, we are obviously getting paid, but we're not all jet-setting all over the world and all that kind of thing. They can see a material impact in their lives. So it's
restoring
it's
trust, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is going to be a long-term thing to try and work on. And unfortunately, as with many things in South Africa, it's going to devolve into very difficult, boring government work where local councillors, people in municipalities around them, they're going to need to do the legwork in terms of going into communities and working with them and figuring out where can these wins be made. From national government side and from Treasury, I think the burden is on them to look at those municipalities that engage in wasteful and fruitless expenditure and hold them to account. And then if they don't reform within, I don't know, 6 months or 9 months, if they don't follow auditing rules, etc., be fiscally responsible, they get less from national government.
Yes, so I think, you know, when the president talks about changing the funding model, he almost certainly means giving these municipalities more money in some sort of way. And that's exactly the wrong approach here, because, you know, when you begin to look into the individual details of each of these municipalities, yes, they have problems with income. But what money they do have is almost always spent very badly, to the point where, you know, even the basics often aren't covered. And then the municipality goes into a crisis mode. And I think this just highlights the problem that South Africa has a spending problem, not an income problem. And curbing the spending problem is the first step to fixing the trust issues. People are not going to pay if they know that the money is just going to be poured like water into the Sahara Desert, into the sand, or it just evaporates. And you know, it's incumbent on government first to prove that it can be trusted before we can start expecting citizens, I think, to start ponying up the money they owe. Okay, let's move on to our next story. The big focus in the budget debate has been the VAT increase that has been proposed. The budget still has not been passed by government, and the ANC seems to be having an ever increasingly difficult time in finding someone to agree to vote with it on passing the budget. But one of the things that's been less talked about is that there has been what's been described as a stealth increase in tax, in income tax, by the Minister of Finance. This is the so-called bracket creep. So normally in a budget, the income brackets for each band of income tax are, you know, raised in accordance with inflation, so that, you know, people sort of relative to their spending power of the previous year kind of stay in the same place in terms of how much they're taxed. But I believe for the last 2 years, Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana has not raised the income brackets in line with inflation. Meaning that you can get an inflation-based wage increase and fall into a new tax bracket, meaning you are now going to be taxed more. Chris, this is also very counterproductive, and I think it's really not the kind of thing, you know, this is exactly the sort of stuff that's going to encourage people to you know, not cooperate with taxes, to hide their income wherever they can. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on this?
When you've got someone like the Commissioner of SARS, Edward Kieswetter, talking about building the capacity of that institution and broadly sort of building trust again in South Africa's institutions following, for example, state capture, getting people to be responsible in terms of paying their tax, but also from the government side, government earning citizens' trust in terms of how the taxes are allocated, how this is all done in terms of getting taxes from citizens and how it is spent. This sort of thing, bracket creep, I think it chips away at some of that positive work that in some places and by some institutions has been done, like SARS. So it's a very insidious form of tax. It's a way to sort of avoid the headlines and to say you know, we're not increasing the top brackets openly. You know, we're not trying to extract more taxes from an ever smaller tax base, which is the reality in South Africa. But they try and do it in a stealthy way. So I think it does. It's definitely not for a relatively low trust in government society, where citizens over time, their trust has been worn away through various examples by what the government has done to them. It doesn't really help to restore that. And it also then raises the question again, year after year, when you've got this coupled with things like where the government says, no, we're going to get a handle on debt, we're going to fix the debt to GDP ratio, we're going to bring down spending. Then you turn around and you say, but you're actually still trying to extract as much as possible. Why are you doing that? Are you focusing really on bringing down wasteful and fruitless expenditure? Or do you just say that and you keep punting, sort of kicking for touch over time? It does also, just for international sentiment and international markets, it undermines the sort of picture of fiscal credibility that the government wants to present, because the rhetoric is one thing, but they'll go and look at the numbers at the tables over time, and that tells you where government's priorities are. So they say they realize we're in this fiscal crunch, we need to deal with wasteful spending, but they don't do it in actuality. So I think they undercut their own argument and just buy-in from taxpayers in the long run.
Exactly. It's the same thing as the right stuff, which is that if government is just seen to be wasting money, you're just going to get, you know, less cooperation, less enthusiasm. The worst case scenario, you end up with something like what happened in Greece, where you just have sort of mass portions of the population refusing to kind of cooperate at all with the tax system, which leads to a huge crisis of finances. Okay, let's move on to our last story. And this is two parts. One is, Chris, you've recently been to the US. So just your thoughts on what you saw while you were there, meeting with various think tanks and things. But also, the US has announced who its ambassador to South Africa is going to be. Now, there was rumors online that it was going to be former Tony Leon speechwriter Joel Pollack. But he, in fact, did not get the nod. In fact, the nominee for South African ambassador to South Africa is Leo Brent Bonzel III, who is a right-leaning pundit and commentator. He started a media watch group in the U.S. He's a nephew of the famous conservative thinker and author William F. Buckley Jr. But as far as I know, he doesn't have any real connections to South Africa. So this does seem like it's sort of a loyalty appointment. Trump is rewarding someone who's been a close supporter of his. But I do think this probably is good news for the ANC, because I don't know much about the new ambassador, but I suspect it will take him a while to get up to speed with the sort of South African environment, which will give the ANC a little bit of breathing room. I don't know. What do you make of this?
Yeah, just on that last point, much hinges on how, if at all, the ANC changes its rhetoric towards the US, and if it does pivot in that regard, if it continues to talk about, you know, ultra right-wing nationalist governments in places like the US. I mean, that just serves as a lightning rod, and maybe they're spoiling for a fight, but they don't realize they don't bring much leverage to this particular fight. So it might help them from a sentiment point of view and sort of rallying around the flag, but it doesn't serve South Africa's interest in terms of trade and investment relationships with the US, and also just from a diplomatic point of view, sort of building those relationships again, if indeed they can be rebuilt at all. I will say this particular nomination, it does seem to indicate that the administration from the US side, that the focus on South Africa has been more from a sort of rhetoric point of view, and we're not yet seeing. We might see things like targeted sanctions, etc., but we haven't seen yet the actions matching the rhetoric, where South Africa has been, maybe along with the EU and one or two other countries and regions, has been the focus for the administration in terms of rhetoric, but not yet in terms of sort of follow through. So maybe they're trying to play a longer game here, trying to see how the ANC reacts, if it does, if the GNU is different from what came before and they do pivot or not. So let's see exactly how that shakes out. Just a mention, one thing that I thought was interesting in my time in Washington was especially around how this idea of America first doesn't necessarily mean America alone. So what I mean by that is, yes, the US is going to be in some ways more inward looking and maybe in some ways more isolationist, but it's also going to want to retain influence and interest in some key regions. Whether it decides sub-Saharan Africa is that, it will want to partner with countries that actually shoulder some of that responsibility. So whether it's militarily, diplomatically, economically, but that extend more agency and ownership in their regions. I think one country that they could be looking at definitely is Rwanda. And if South Africa doesn't get its own house in order, the trend line is going to continue that the US doesn't really want to actively partner with South Africa on a serious level. So that's just one main thing. There are many others that I sort of came across and learned in my time in Washington that were especially interesting. But I think that's maybe the main thing to take away. The analysis is easy to say. It's just America first. It's isolationist. It's going to retract completely. I think they're going to want to work just smarter with some key partners in some regions. Whether South Africa can be that and whether South Africa can deal with this new ambassador, I think is a different question. I think especially for South African media, we talk about things like combating misinformation and disinformation, and that's where the rhetoric is. For someone of this particular nominee's background, he's not really going to, indulge in those sorts of debates and discussions. So they might be in for a rough ride, regardless of who the nominee was ultimately going to be. This is the new administration, and South Africa needs to deal with it accordingly.
Interesting stuff. Okay, let us call it to a close there. Thank you very much for watching. And that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.